Hello, DC. Happy Memorial Day weekend, 3-day weekend. Hope you guys are enjoying this. Ben Standig here. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. They let me get back here in the host chair to close out this Memorial Day weekend. It is a we're going to call this the Ben Cast. Ben Standig here. Ben Strober is my producer. We got a Bennett here who's watching what that Ben is doing. Very confusing, but not really. If we need to, we'll go with last names. We'll work it. We'll work it all out. You'll probably hear from them throughout the show. Thank you for joining me here. And of course, big thanks, of course, to all the people out there who serve in our military, to those who pay the ultimate price for this country. That's what this weekend is about. Hopefully everybody has a moment to recognize that and think about that for a moment. We're here, of course. We're talking sports. It's a bit of the distraction from the regular day-to-day life, and we've got a bunch of things to get into. Since I do cover the Commanders, logically, it makes sense for me to talk about them a bunch. So later in this hour, I'll give you an OTA preview. The team starts their true offseason program this week, and I'll also talk about which players on the team I think have the biggest variance in terms of helping the Commanders jump a level or possibly take a step back. In the 7 o'clock hour, my pal Britt Giroli, who covers MLB for The Athletic as well, she joins me. She used to cover the Nats and Orioles. We'll get into those two teams. The Nats are on a bit of a surge. What does this mean? A lot of the players are up now from the Juan Soto deal. We'll get her thoughts on that. And then at 7:30, Chase Hughes from Monumental Sports will join me to talk about the NBA draft. We know the Wizards have 2 picks in the first round. What can they do to get some help? Who are some of the targets they should get? And what do we think about the current roster in context for this draft? So we'll do all that. If you want to call in, please do so. 800-636-1067. Keep Ben, producer Ben, busy. He doesn't need to be slacking back there. Keep him busy and, chime in. You want to talk to me about the Commanders? Obvious. We can do that. You got other thoughts on DC sports? I'm not going to pin everybody to a topic. It is a wide open situation here for sure. I want to get to just sort of we're here at the top. It's kind of a odd weekend locally, right? I mean, the Nats are off today, so don't really have anything to get into there. I mentioned that they've been on a bit of a surge. They won 7 of 10, but this was a day on some level, or the last couple of days on some level, a chance to notice what else is happening around town in the world of sports. Start off in a bit of a downer, though. Today, as traditionally is, the men's college lacrosse championship game is always on this Memorial Day Monday. And I hate to say it like this, but typically this often means that the Maryland Terrapins are losing the game.
It's so tough.
It is tough. It is tough. They have made it, 9 times? Right under this coach,
9 times under Tillman.
Under Tillman, met him before once out and about. They've won twice, but they lost 7 times. Today they lose to Cornell, 13-10. It's the 4th title for Cornell. Their first, though, I think I saw since 1977. Yep. I have a cousin that went to Cornell. I didn't realize it was that crazy of a drought, but nonetheless. Cornell's a legit team. I don't think this was an upset.
They're the number 1 seed in this tournament. The only loss they had this year was to Penn State, who they end up getting the better of in the Final Four. Their head coach is 31 years old, and he just won the title. He gets his revenge over Tillman, who beat him 9-7 3 years ago. And it's even crazier, the storylines within this game, because John Tillman played lacrosse at Cornell before becoming an assistant at Navy, then eventually the head coach at Harvard before becoming the legendary head coach that he's been at Maryland, taking Maryland to 11 Final Fours. But Championship Monday has just been a struggle for him for whatever reason. A lot of people believe it's because of how process-oriented John Tillman is as a head coach. If they have that 1 week to prepare like they did after the quarterfinal, that's one of the most successful. But just 2 days to get that preparation going. And there were just too many key mistakes by Maryland, especially in the 4th quarter. They failed 3 clears and turned it over 6 times. It could not happen against a team that has the best player in the world right now in CJ Kearst. He had 6 goals today.
Yeah, no, I mean, from the little bit I saw, he looked phenomenal Kearse did for sure. You know, you talk about the process and how it's a difference, and it's true, a difference between having several days, a week, whatever it is, to plan for an opponent versus that quick turnaround like you see in the college basketball tournament. And there are coaches, I always think, in college basketball that are better suited for that quick turnaround. There's others that need, they'll X and O you to death, but they need that time, especially like teams that just have maybe a little bit less talent that have to build up. I always think like a guy like Rick Pitino, you could throw him out there at any point, he'll figure out a way, although not so much this year in the tournament, kind of screwed up my bracket accordingly. But tough blow for Maryland. Look, obviously a great year, no shame in getting to the finals and not winning, but nonetheless, it is an unfortunate trend. You know, had to note that they are always there in the mix, for sure. By the way, it's crazy that Cornell went this long, considering, let's be realistic, what are there, like 20 teams or less who are actual contenders in any given year in men's lacrosse? Like, basically, west of the Mississippi, you can tell me if I'm wrong, it's like the University of Denver of all places, and then that's kind of it. I'm sure it's getting better, but it's not much going on, and yet they haven't won in 77 years, or 48 years? That's crazy.
It's interesting, Ben, because the sport of lacrosse really outside of Maryland actually has a lot more parity than one would think. Maryland has the all-time record for most NCAA tournament appearances in a row, with this year being their 22nd. The second longest streak currently behind them was Georgetown with just 7. So that kind of shows you how the mix changes around, especially within these conferences. And Cornell plays in the Ivy League, which is a top-of-the-line conference every single year. Princeton was right in the mix, battling with them in the Ivy League this year. Harvard had a really good year. That conference is really elite, and Cornell at times really struggled to win that conference and get their way back up. But this year, they were just too talented.
So it goes. We'll see if Maryland can get across the finish line next year. I'm sure they will have another talented team coming back. You know, as Ben just said, they've made the tournament. They basically make it every year. Probably, I don't know how old producer Ben is. They probably made it every single year of his life or close to it.
I'm 21, so they have.
Yeah, so they have. Yeah, there you go.
I just graduated, Ben. In my 4 years at Maryland, they made the national championship in every single year except for my sophomore year, and that's when the goalkeeper was out with an ACL tear.
Ugh. Well, all right. At least you got this. You know, it's better to win. I know people get frustrated when your team, whatever the sport is, gets into the playoffs, gets deep in and lose. But I'm telling you, I've been on the other side, as a lot of DC fans have. You know, you talk about the Commanders, in particular, the Wizards haven't had a 50 win season since I was alive, but not for too long. And it's been a drought. So you appreciate the wins, and hopefully they can get across the finish line.
I did the play by play last national championship game when it was in Philadelphia. I was doing the quarterfinal last week, and because I'm here this weekend, I wasn't able to make the trip to Foxborough. We had a couple other guys from our student radio that did it, but those are just such incredible experiences to go up there for championship weekend, cover these games, do the play-by-play for them. Really great experience. I'm happy for my friends that got to do it this year, and it's just a tough way to end for this Maryland team this year that was so good, so talented.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, what else happened in town this weekend? We had the senior PGA Tour, I guess it's Champions Tour now. They played a championship event at Congressional. Angel Cabrera, weirdly, he won his second major in a week. Don't ask me how that schedule works, but that's how it went down. Padraig Harrington fell apart late, had a two-stroke lead, fell apart. That leaderboard, I was watching both that for a few minutes and the regular PGA Tour this week, which was down at the, I think it's called the Charles Schwab Challenge now, with the old Colonial down in Fort Worth. And that leaderboard had no names of anybody who's familiar with. Scottie Scheffler kind of jumped up on there late, but really wasn't a factor. The Champions Tour was much bigger names, but honestly, not enough to get people out there. My sense is like it wasn't particularly a crowded field. I certainly didn't talk about it with anybody, even though you had guys like not just Cabrera and Harrington, but like Retief Goosen, Lee Westwood, and a bunch of others. So the I only point that out to say that like 20 years ago, that's an event that would have been discussed and talked about around here. The nature of sports, it feels like now, if it's not the NFL or, you know, the NBA playoffs or some of these high profile events, it just does not get the attention that it did before. It is what it is. Another local note, if you bought tickets to go see Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever play the Mystics in Baltimore on Wednesday, I got bad news for you. Like the worst news possible. Caitlin Clark's not going to play. She's suffered an injury today in the game. She'll be out at least a couple of weeks. So tough blow there. I went to see Caitlin Clark play last year. It's worth, she's worth the price of admission. She ain't there this time. So hopefully if you paid, you didn't do like some, I don't know what the scalper rate was going like. Hopefully you didn't do anything too crazy on that front. We may talk a little bit more about Caitlin Clark and the WNBA later in the show. This week, there's a notable local event, and I'm going to be there. Commanders OTA starts this week. Media will be out there on Wednesday, and it'll be our first chance to see the rookies and the veterans out there. And I want to discuss with you what I'm going to be watching out there. It's not the X's and O's. It's the individual players. What do they look like? What's the mood out there? Last year, it was a lot of kumbaya. What's the mood? I want to talk more about that, and we're going to do that after the next break. So come join us, 800-636-1067. We're going to talk Commanders probably for the rest of this hour here on 106.7 The Fan. Always a pleasure to hear the dulcet tones of my guy, Byron Kerr, giving us the updates here on 106.7 The Fan. Yes, I am neither Grant nor Danny, though I am often on their show as a guest. I'm Ben Standig, and I cover the Washington Commanders. I'm with you today until 9 o'clock here on 106.7 The Fan. If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Your topics, whatever you want, but obviously Commanders, would be a logical one to ask a guy who actually covers them. You got OTAs this week. And if you want to listen to any parts of this show or any of the shows, you can listen live on the Odyssey app. If you want to download that, I guarantee people here would be really thrilled if you wanted to do that. Not want to, actually do it. That's what they want you to do. All right. So OTAs start this week for the Commanders. We had rookie camp earlier this month. The players, the veterans have been around at the facility working out with each other, but this is the formal part where they can get on the field and go through true team drills. These are no pads at these practices, and certainly they will run through a lot of the basics, some of the installs, some of the, just to get familiar, obviously, for the new veterans like your Laremy Tunsils and Debo Samuels. This is their first time with the team. Whereas like the returning players from Jaden Daniels to Bobby Wagner and so on, they are familiar with what Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. want from them. But, this is a good chance to, lay down the fundamentals and get a feel for this team. So when I'm out there this week, and we'll be out there on Wednesday, I'm not going to be watching for, how crisp does the passing game look? It's more of, does everybody look up to speed? Does everybody look to be healthy and good shape and just, where are the lineups and things like that? So I wanted to go through a couple of the things that I'm going to be focused on the most while out there. Number one for me, I'm going to go with the vibe. Now, this is, anybody who's familiar with, say, Major League Baseball spring training knows this, the preseason, I don't mean the preseason games, but this part of the of the schedule, the practices, couldn't be a happier time in the world. Everybody is great. It doesn't matter whether you're the Super Bowl champion Eagles or the NFC runner-up Washington or the team that had the worst record in the league, the Tennessee Titans. Everybody's feeling optimistic at this time of the year. And, they should. You haven't played a game yet. Who predicted the Washington would go from 4 wins in 2023 to a 12-win season and getting all the way to the NFC Championship game for the first time since 1991. Anything, not to sound Kevin Garnett here, but, anything is possible, or at least that's what you're going to think at this time of the year. But even with that said, last year's vibe, you could tell something was different. Now, last year was, of course, the first time Washington was without any real parts of the Dan Snyder era. Obviously, he had already sold the team the year prior, but now the Ron Rivera regime was gone, replaced with Adam Peters at GM, Dan Quinn at head coach, and everybody else on their staffs more, you know, way more than half the roster turned over, and it was a very different deal. But even the guys who were back, like your Jonathan Allen, your Terry McLaurin's, when we would ask them, hey, what does it feel like to be back? And how does it feel to be with your teammates and his new staff? There was an extra, you know, there was a little bit extra in their smiles, in their step, in their comments. It made you realize or think, hey, there's a different attitude taking place here. And that was a lot about Dan Quinn and how he was connecting with the players and the staff. And this is a theme that carried this team all the way through the season. I've said before, I've never seen, at least that I've covered, never seen a greater sum of the parts team than this one. Like, this was not the most talented team in the world, and yet, obviously, we saw what the results were, and I think, you know, the seeds of that began here. There was a lot of buy-in to what the staff was selling, and, you know, when you buy in, when you accept your role, when you understand what the expectations are, you know, to be a commander, that's something we hear about a lot now, but last year was the start of that. What does it mean to be a commander? It's so important. You know, it's not something that can always be measured, but it is something that can be learned, and you could feel that that was happening in real time. Now, I would assume we won't see any differences, but you never know for sure, right? I mean, this they've been the talk of the league, the Commanders. You know, nobody expected this. Are they going to come in, some guys, and feel like, hey, you know, I'm the king of the world? I don't know, but I'm just saying that's the type of thing that could happen. There's also new players, right? Laremy Tunsil. The Texans were willing to move on from him. He's not considered to be like a locker room leader. He's obviously, though, a tremendous offensive tackle and, you know, one of the better pass blockers in the league, but the Texans were willing to move on from him. It can't just be about the play, right? They're going through their own thing. We're not going to get into the Texans, but he's coming in different. Deebo Samuel, he's coming in from San Francisco. Clearly, Adam Peters knows him well. He was part of the front office that drafted him. But the 49ers were willing to take a massive salary cap hit to trade Deebo Samuel only for a fifth-round pick. You know, I think they wanted a new vibe in the building there as well. So how does Deebo Samuel come in and perform? He had a very choppy 2024 season. That's one of the reasons why he was both on the trade block and relatively cheap to come over. Even a guy like Marshawn Lattimore, you know, he was the one guy. Like, last year felt like a Disney script in general for this team, except when he came over, it was like definitely a little bit off. He was out for several weeks because of the hamstring injury, and then it was having trouble when he was on the field, especially in the playoffs. And the vibe just didn't quite feel right all the way around. Now we'll see. Is he healthy? Is he ready to go? We'll talk more about that in a minute. But just the vibe in general, how does everybody feel? What's the sense out there? I think that to me is as important as almost anything else that's going to happen and out there. And that, by the way, that also includes Jaden Daniels. Again, Jaden Daniels had one of the most remarkable rookie seasons in league history last year. We all, you know, offensive rookie of the year, but it wasn't just the play on the field, his maturity, his leadership, his ability. And by leadership, I mostly mean his ability to stay, not get high, not get low, just to stay level no matter all the successes or at those moments where things didn't go as planned. And you heard that early on at this point last year, that players were talking about how early he was getting in to the building to work out. You heard about, you know, his understanding of the playbook, how he was ready to go quickly. And again, I expect to hear nothing different about that, but let's just see. You know, even just for Jaden himself, you know, clearly everybody out there in the world wants a piece of Jaden Daniels. He's become a very popular guy on the autograph circuit, on the pitchman circuit. He's at different events. What was his offseason truly like? We've all seen pictures and videos, but let's hear from him about that. I don't know definitively if he will talk this week, but presumably he might. And either way, other people will talk about him. Is there anything that's different about him? Does he look different? Has he put on weight? Does he look noticeably bigger or whatever? You know, so I think all of that to me is interesting. And then the last one for me here will be the offensive line. a lot of moving pieces. Who's at right guard and who's at right tackle? You think first round pick Josh Connerly Jr. is going to get every chance to win that right tackle job. But what about Brandon Coleman? Does Brandon Coleman, the left tackle last year, I presume he's going to move inside, but is he going to be at right guard as the part of the short-term replacement plan while Sam Cosmi recovers from his ACL? Do they move him at left guard, which would mean a competition with Nick Allegretti? Where does Andrew Wiley, the right tackle starter the last 2 years, fit in? I think, again, wherever they line up this week does not have anything to do with week one. It may not have anything to do with anything. They just may let the vets go ahead of the rookies. That happens often. But let's just see where that starts. Eventually, I imagine Connerly at right tackle, Coleman, I'm going to guess left guard, but we'll see. But then who's at right guard with Cosmi out? I think those are among the things that I'm going to look for this weekend or this week for sure. Producer Ben, you telling me we've got a call here?
No, I was just going to throw you question right here because you were on Jaden. You said you were a little bit unsure if he was going to speak to the media. I'm just wondering for you, someone that attends every press conference and asks the question, obviously, do you know what you plan on maybe asking Jaden if you get the opportunity? It's okay if not, but yeah, just kind of trying to pick your brain a little bit.
It's a good question. It's a good question that one I haven't actually noodled yet. I think like in general, like what did he do? Like I'm sure he worked out with his fellow receivers. I knew he and Sam Hartman at points were in California working out. I'm sure he was with his quarterback coach. But like, what were some of the specific things that he was focused on? It's not like there was much to pick at last year, obviously, but you could always improve. Were there, keeping his eyes down the field and maybe trying to avoid getting out of the pocket as soon as he did at times last year, which he had no choice at times. I mean, that's partly why they've upgraded the offensive line, mm-hmm. was because he was facing pressure often, particularly off the left side. Were there certain parts of the field, certain throws he was trying to make that maybe he didn't feel as comfortable with a year ago? And then, again, it's just the worst part of the season for this team was when he got hurt with the rib. Did he do anything to try to, to try to be stronger, to bulk up? Again, he's, I wish I had his problem in terms of being able to gain weight. He's a pretty, thin guy, relatively speaking. So it's not like he's ever going to be some Josh Allen powerhouse back mm-hmm. there. But at the same point, does he find a way to get a little bit stronger?
You seen the image?
What's that?
The image circling. Have you seen that one yet?
No.
There's an image going around of Jaden looking evidently a little bit bigger. Oh. And people have been speculating about, what necessarily that means. Is this really indicative of how big he actually is? Because we've seen so many off-season images of different players in the past. Even the Nationals this year with Jacob Young, everyone was circulating images on social media of him looking jacked. And another one came about with Jaden. You should probably take a look at that one. But you never know what you really are truly seeing within those images. But you'll probably get a glance, though, in person when you do see him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like I said, just to put eyes on these guys, I think, does go a long way. And, look, even just to see who needs, we're only going to be out there one day. They'll be practicing for 3 days. But, do we get a sense of, somebody's getting a day off because they just are getting a day off? That would be odd early on, but it could be a sign that, hey, somebody is dealing with something. Maybe it's, if we're talking about, Marshawn Lattimore, that would be very problematic considering how his year went a year ago. But we'll see. I'll give everybody the benefit of the doubt at this point for sure. I mean, just to go back to Jaden, I've been here my whole life and I've covered all these teams and, there have been moments when Bryce Harper was the talk of Major League Baseball. Obviously Alex Ovechkin has been an NHL headliner his whole career. The Wizards had a moment or two with Gilbert Arenas or John Wall. And even, of course, this franchise going back to the Super Bowl era particularly had guys who've been in the Hall of Fame. But we haven't really had a quarterback sensation like Jaden Daniels. I guess let me rephrase that. We had the 1 year of RG3. But already, Jaden Daniels is ahead of that curve. Because at this point, it was the all-in for week one bit with RG3 coming off the injury. And that was around the point to me where I started to feel the wheels were coming off. Because the all-in for week one was like, wait, why are we talking like this? Just go out there and do your job. Be as healthy as you can, but don't force this thing. It was like a commercial. It was very odd times. Jaden's not dealing with that. He, as far as we know, he's healthy. As far as we know, he's ready to get the work. He's already been out here with, like I said, with the rest of the team. But just to see what it's like for a guy who is getting all this attention. The Commanders are all these primetime games, all the Christmas Day games overseas. It's not because they won 12 games. It's not because they went to the NFC Championship. It's because people are interested in this guy. And how does that weigh on a guy? And the fact that he, as a human being, was completely cool like last year, like had no ups, no downs. Will that continue again? All right, up next, who are the players on this team that I think have the biggest variance to success for Washington this year? We'll do that next here on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan. Ben Standing here with you until 9 o'clock tonight on this Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for tuning in. I've been talking, of course, about the Commanders OTA this week. And I wanted to get into here about the players who have, I think, have the biggest, their performances will have the biggest variance on the team. Now, I'm not talking about injuries. Well, let me rephrase that. I mean, I'm not talking about injuries like randomly. Like, of course, if, you know, knock on wood, Jaden Daniels gets hurt, that's a problem. Okay, you know, things along those lines. But I'm talking about players who, as it stands right now, whether it's about their production, injuries, playing time, or whatever it may be, that I think could raise or stunt the Commanders' growth this year. Now, one guy, like I'll mention, who had a tremendous 2024, Zach Ertz. Nobody imagined that Zach Ertz was going to be as highly productive as he was a year ago. I remember when that move came, you know, right before free agency even started, I was like, well, I guess they're going to, you know, they'll add some competition or something else is going to happen. Nope, not really. I mean, they did draft Ben Sinnott, but Zach Ertz, 66 catches, 654 yards, 7 touchdowns in the regular season. He was a go-to target for Jaden Daniels in the red zone, especially late in the year. Tremendous year. He re-signed on a one-year deal. My only concern here is, or the reason to note is, look, he's, you know, going to be 35 during the season. And the previous couple of years, he had missed time with injuries. Or you know, he only played 7 games for Arizona in 2023. They released him late that year. 2022, he only played 10 games for the Cardinals. And yeah, they have John Bates as a blocker, and Ben Sinnott is there. I don't know quite yet what Ben Sinnott is, so if Zach Ertz were to miss time, I don't know that they have an obvious go-to tight end target the way they had this past year and the way they were counting on Zach Ertz going forward. So I think that, to me, is a huge one. It's one of the positions where I don't know what happens if the starter goes out, and his production last year was tremendous. Not the, plus, like, the leadership, just steady, not the fastest guy in the world anymore by any stretch, but he's just a steady target for this young quarterback. I think that's key. Hopefully he's able to have another productive and healthy season for Washington. Speaking of productive and healthy receiving targets, give me Deebo Samuel next. Now, look, Deebo Samuel is coming off a year with the 49ers that was, you know, basically the worst of his career in terms of any season where he's played at least 13 games. He only had 670 yards receiving. He had 806 yards from scrimmage. That's the lowest amount he's had in any year, with, again, with at least 13 games, only 4 touchdowns. His big thing is yards after the catch, and he really was just not as much of a factor for the 49ers. It's only a one-year deal for Washington, so should this not work out at all, they can move on. But they brought him in for a reason. They want to upgrade that opportunity. They were lagging last year in terms of plays of like 20 or more yards. This is why they went out and got this guy, who was a Pro Bowler in 2021. He was drafted by Adam Peters back in 2019 when Peters was with the 49ers. Washington brought in Wes Welker to be part of their personnel department, the personnel analyst. Welker was Debo's wide receiver coach his first 3 years in the league. He was the guy who kind of stayed on Deebo in terms of his weight. And I can't imagine that this was coincidental, that of all the gin joints, they brought in Wes Welker to this one to help out. I think if Deebo Samuel is right, this is a huge opportunity for Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin to have another receiving target to help that cause. But I'm not going to assume anything. I want to see what he looks like throughout the summer. And once the season starts, you know, does he stay healthy? Where is his head at? Where's his concentration? It's a big year for him going into a contract year. So I think of Deebo Samuel is a big variance there. Next one for me, Marshawn Lattimore. I mentioned him before. This one's pretty simple if you paid attention to his recent career and last season. He, you know, they acquired him at the midway point of the year, and yet he only ended up playing two games for Washington because of the hamstring injury. And the thing is, the hamstring injury is not just a one-off. 2022, he played seven games. 2023, he played 10 games. Last year, including his time with the Saints, he played nine games. Not only has he been unable to stay on the field, his play last year was, you know, to say the least, up and down. Against Mike Evans in Tampa Bay, against A.J. Brown and the Eagles in the playoffs, he was the guy that was kind of getting picked on and was having struggles out there. We can maybe give him a pass to a degree because of the injury. You know, the game against Mike Evans, he had missed several games and then had to go in and face one of the best receivers in the league in the playoffs. Very tough spot for him. They do have other cornerbacks now. They draft Trey Amos. They signed Jonathan Jones. Mikey Sainer still is a year now into the league. So if Lattimore were to miss time, they have some other options in ways they didn't a year ago as easily. But that said, having Lattimore play at a Pro Bowl level, this is why they gave up picks to get this guy, is a huge deal. And, you know, they don't have anybody who, as of now, has his upside, and that's why it's such a big deal if he's able to go. The number one, though, for me, is somebody who's been on this team for a long time. This is a guy who was the last one of these defensive linemen to be around the four first-round picks, and that's Daron Payne. We have seen Daron Payne play at a very high level. Back in 2022, when Daron Payne was playing for a contract, he had 11.5 sacks. He had 18 tackles for loss. He was a presence. There is no question about it. And we see other defensive tackles in this league, Dexter Lawrence within this division, Jalen Carter up in Philadelphia, be a menace. And when we talk all the time about this Washington team, what do we say? They didn't get any real help as on the edge pass rushers. That's fair. But that is why if Daron Payne can have a year, doesn't have to be as dynamic as it was in 2022, but it can be a lot better than what it's been the last couple of years. Since that breakout year, he's had a combined 8 sacks and a combined 18 tackles for loss. That's equal to or less than what he had in that one year. Now there's no more Jonathan Allen. Montez Sweat and Chase Young are long gone. If Daron Payne can get back to a level that was like at that Pro Bowl level, I don't know what exactly it will change for this defense, but it gives them the best opportunity to turn this around, to get to a point where maybe you can say, hey, Dietrich Wise and Dorrance Armstrong are facing, you know, more one-on-one opportunities, that Bobby Wagner is getting a clean run from that middle linebacker spot to go after running backs or to chase after a quarterback, whatever it might be. If he's getting that pass rush up the middle, hopefully Johnny Newton's also improving off a year where he didn't have any offseason work. Now he has. I think Daron Payne can give them a huge lift. Will it happen? I don't know. You could argue this is a contract year for him because otherwise he's going to get Jonathan Allen in the offseason, but we will see how that goes. So those are the guys I think have the most variance with the comes to what Washington success. Coming up next, Britt Chiarelli is going to join me. We're going to talk Nats, Orioles, and Major League Baseball. We're going to do that here till 9 o'clock here on 106.7 The Fan.